Joyce Carol Oates is one of America's most honored and most prolific authors. She's written more than 40 novels, plus short stories, essays, and poetry. Oates' latest novel is The Sacrifice. It's a fictionalized account of the 1987 Tawana Brawley case. Brawley was a 15-year-old black girl who was found bloody, beaten, smeared with excrement. She also had racist graffiti on her body. Eventually, though, it turned out that Brawley had manufactured the incident. Joyce Carol Oates explained to Ross Reynolds how she changed the Brawley story for her novel.
The fundamental difference is that in real life, Tawana Brawley had not been beaten or raped or imprisoned. There was virtually nothing wrong with her. She wasn't even malnourished. But in my novel, the girl has been raped. She's been beaten quite savagely. She's very much in fear of her life. And so basically I'm writing about a situation that was suggested by the Tawana Brawley case as that case was presented to the world. But I'm not really writing about the actual case. To me, the emblematic situation of a black girl, could even be a white girl. I mean, a girl who's been sexually abused and beaten and is terrified, who has to keep a family secret, basically, that's what the novel's about. To me, that's a symbolic situation that's much more interesting and more significant than the Tawana Brawley case itself.
The title, The Sacrifice, comes from something that the black minister who takes up this young girl's case says of this kidnapping, rape, and beating by a police officer she said was inflicted on her. He says, the sacrifice will not be in vain. What's he referring to?
Well, ironically, he's really making a sacrifice of this girl, because if he had let her alone and he had not tried to exploit her, the subsequent tragedy, which is what the novel's about, would not have happened. She did not tell the truth, even though she had been beaten and sexually abused. She didn't tell the truth about who had done it. And she couldn't tell the truth, and she never does in the novel say who does it. The reader can figure out who did it. It's pretty clear by the end of the novel. But she's in a situation, as many sexually abused and terrified girls have been throughout history, I suppose. She can't speak the truth, so maybe she has to say something. If she's forced to say something, she will probably not tell the truth. She'll make up a story. But if he had let her alone, she wouldn't have made up the story.
The Tawana Brawley case was really a touchstone in America because people felt so differently about it, depending on what their race was. And in reading your book, I had the sense that there was you were making an effort to try to have us understand these characters, non-white characters, and the way they were reacting to the situation in a way that white readers might not ordinarily be able to perceive. Is that part of your goal here?
Yes, but in actual reality, and also in my novel, many of the black residents of the neighborhood did not believe it. They were, in reality, as the grand jury interviewed many witnesses and people in the neighborhood, most of them didn't really believe it. It's just that they didn't want to inform on one of their own people, so to speak. It's probably a little bit like the O.J. Simpson situation, where possibly the jurors who acquitted him didn't really believe that he was innocent, but they did not believe and did not want to believe the white policeman. So it's a situation that I'm perfectly sympathetic with. I mean, not that I think O.J. Simpson should have been acquitted, but I think when we look into the history, the terrible, tragic history of white racism enacted by police departments all over the country, not just in my novel, not just in Ferguson, Missouri, or New York City, or Albuquerque, but virtually everywhere over the decades, we can understand why a black population just becomes exasperated, desperate, and even reckless. So my novel is really not trying to cast stones at anybody. It's trying to show how white racism, or by extension any racism, is painful and costly to everybody.
Oh, The Sacrifice, as I was reading it, felt very much of the moment with the recent incidents involving the police shooting of unarmed black men and how white and black America have had very different reactions to that. Does Ferguson raise the same issues as you're trying to raise in your novel?
It's so strange and ironic because I finished the novel 2 years ago in January, and subsequently all these things have come to light and been in the public consciousness. I don't think it breaks down in terms of race completely. You said the difference between white and black reactions. Many, many, many white people are completely sympathetic with the protesters and extremely critical of white racism. It's not really that way at all. It's more right-wing white Americans who sort of unthinkingly align with the police. And I would wonder if they would, if they understood how much they have to pay. Their tax money goes to enabling this racism because there are settlements. I think maybe like $100 million a year in New York City alone paid out to support that the white racist behavior of maybe a small proportion of the NYPD. It may not be very many, maybe quite small. But all that money goes in these settlements, even though the police themselves are never held accountable. They're virtually never indicted. They just walk away. Maybe they have a day off suspended with or without pay. They're never fired. They have a strong union. But in the meantime, sort of around the corner, so to speak, the courts are finding them culpable and paying hundreds of millions of dollars out to the victims of this sort of discrimination.
You know, I look at both the quality and quantity of your literary output, Joyce Carol Oates. I think you must be a writer who makes very few false moves, that you, when you sit down and begin something, you're going to take it right to the end. I would guess there are not many discarded manuscripts in your drawers.
Well, that's an interesting question, I guess. I have a number of manuscripts, even of novels, that I set aside and then I go back to. And so I keep on with the project until it's finished, but then I might put it aside. I wrote a novel called The Accursed in 1984, and then I kept working on it over the years, and it only came out last year. So it was 1984. I did other things, of course.
Sure.
But I would go back to that manuscript of about 800 pages and work on it and then get discouraged and put it away and then keep coming back to it. Till 2011, I saw a way of writing it. So I basically rewrote the whole, every word. And
wow. That's a long gap. Are there manuscripts you have that you still haven't been able to quite get over the top on?
That one is the longest. But yeah. All these things are sort of mysterious. Like, why couldn't I have written it, let's say, in 1999? I just couldn't seem to. But after Barack Obama was elected president, my novel is about race. That's also about race. I often write about race in America. After he was elected president, somehow it cast a light back on those decades, because that novel set in 1905 and 1906, when it was a completely racist country, and lynchings were quite common. Lynchings were never punished in 1905. So my novels were much about the lynching culture and the Ku Klux Klan and that sort of thing.
How is writing different for you now than it was, say, 30 years ago when you sat down to begin writing a book?
Well, when I first began writing, I would write everything in my own voice. It would be like a narration by the author. Now I'm much, much more interested in allowing people to speak. I'll have characters speak and tell their own stories in their interesting voices. The sacrifice to me is about the different voices of the people in the community. The black woman who's the mother of the girl herself, a black minister and his brother who's a lawyer, and the Hispanic woman detective. They all have slightly different voices. I mean, they're not radically different because that would be somewhat gimmicky, but they're each is a little different from the others. Whereas in the past, as I would say, it would be all my voice telling the story. Now I let the story be dramatized through these people's voices.
When you look to the future, are there sort of projects or goals you have in mind for writing that you have not accomplished yet? I mean, you've done so many different things, from essays to nonfiction to poetry to novels. In your mind, is there something before you that you really want to tackle?
Well, I want to write a novel about the deep divisions in the United States. I think I'm drawn to the tragedy or drama, perhaps it's not always tragic, of the profound divisions in our country. And what I want to write about is the abortion issue, the right to life people, with whom I have some sympathy, and the pro-life people, with whom I have some sympathy. So I wanted to write about families on two families on each side of that issue. But I wanted to write about in terms of people, not the issue. You know, what happens when they come into a tragic clash, and how in the younger generation, how maybe it could be worked out instead of emotional compromise through getting to know one another. It sounds like an outline that's somewhat diagrammatic, but as I write the novel, it turns into this turmoil of human relations and fathers and daughters and fathers and sons, and it sounds a little complicated, but anyway, that's what I'm working on.
I like Twitter, and sometimes I explain it to contemporaries, and they just kind of don't get it. And I notice you're a prolific tweeter, usually retweeting what others have said, but sometimes your own thoughts, like this from yesterday, unverify that tweets cause autism, other conditions must be present, end quote. What do you get out of Twitter?
Oh, Twitter's been really revolutionary. I think the social media, especially Twitter, which is actually the only one that I know, have been really a new kind of illumination and revelation. I only follow fairly serious people. For instance, I might follow Nicholas Kristof. I might follow some philosophers. I follow a classicist. I follow writers. I follow the animal rights people. I follow many feminists. And I follow what are, for instance, called Cop Watch, people all around the country who are looking at their local police departments and taking videotapes and doing things that the local media can't do because they're just, you know, overextended. And I follow Anonymous, and I follow Al Jazeera America. It's a way of putting together quite a diverse and heterogeneous perspective, a range of perspective of the United States. I read the New York Times, but the New York Times would never be able to cram all these things in. And I do have a soft spot in my heart for anything with cats or kittens.
I've noticed that.
I have to admit that when I've been reading about the serious stuff, it's so, so depressing, some of it, I have to turn to a cat video and retweet that.
You know, some decry Twitter as just being destructive to writing. I kind of like the discipline of doing 140 characters. What do you think it does to writing?
Oh, to me, it's almost like a sonnet. In fact, it's even more much a discipline than a sonnet. I can work on a tweet for quite a while to get rid of extraneous words, to completely recast a sentence so it will fit in, to get rid of some verbs and not even have any verbs or leave off articles. It's a new way of writing.
Author Joyce Carol Oates is going to be even more prolific. Her latest novel is The Sacrifice. She spoke with Ross Reynolds.